Blog Talk Radio.
Thank you for joining us on History FM Radio on liveparanormal.com and history.fm. From paranormal to the unexplained history, it all happens here. Looking to enhance your radio experience? Participate in live interactive chat 24/7 with our radio show hosts and other like-minded people on www.liveparanormal.com, the only interactive social chat room supported by full interactive media. Stop by now and join in on the fun.
Everybody, and thank you for joining us on this hot and sticky Friday evening here in Florida. Welcome to Cryptoville. I'm your host, Susan McNally, and I would like to get us settled in. We'll have a nice chat in this next hour. Let's pretend that we're in some cool, quiet sort of place this time. I'm picturing someplace in the Pacific Northwest. Perhaps overlooking some mountains and their beautiful scenery. I'll let some of you figure out how to make the fire while the rest of us join, pull up chairs around that fire. I hope you all have a drink or something that you enjoy. And I'm pretending that I've brought all the makings for s'mores this evening so we can pig out while we're chatting as well. The topic tonight, not surprisingly, is Mount Adams, Washington. Well, guess where that is? In the Pacific Northwest. It's been a known UFO hotspot for quite some time, although I think in recent years it's picked up a bit more. Oh, and you know something? Before I get into this, let me just do a little housekeeping. As I said, the name of the show is Cryptoville, and I chose that name because it's based on my blog. So if you're interested in reading more and other articles, and also to reference some of the video links that I'm going to talk about this evening, just go to Cryptoville, C-R-Y, P as in Paul, T as in Tom, O, V as in Victor, I-L-L-E, .wordpress.com. And, you know, you can get to the articles that way and also the video links. And the video links will be in the entry called Mount Adams, Washington UFO Hotspot. Okay, so what's going on out in Mount Adams? Well, it's a huge mountain located in the Cascade Mountains, which you may have heard about. And Mount Adams is about 31 miles from Mount St. Helens, which is, if you're old enough, you'll remember that that erupted in 1980, and it erupted spectacularly. It was incredible. Now, Mount Adams is actually larger, I guess, than Mount St. Helens, they say. It's one of the largest volcanoes in that area, and it reaches a height of over 12,000 feet. The good news is the last eruption that it went through is estimated to have occurred in 550 BC, give or take 1,000 years. It's a type of volcano called a stratovolcano, and that simply means that it builds up tremendous pressures as it gets ready to blow. And that's what happened, of course, with Mount St. Helens. This is important, though, and I want you to just hold on to that fact that Mount Adams holds on to a lot of pressure. And in fact, if you don't remember the Mount St. Helens, you might remember hearing about the eruption on Krakatoa, east of Java. That's a legendary volcanic eruption, much like these other two in the mountains in the Cascades. So let's move on. Down in the valley around Mount Adams, life is much more peaceful, except for the fact that there have been an incredible number of UFO sightings and, frankly, some other paranormal phenomena seen in the forest around the area. A couple TV shows went there and investigated. And now one of those was Paranormal State, for sure they went. And I cannot been able to think of the other one that went, but I want to say it was fact or faked, but I might be wrong in that. Perhaps some of you remember. But at any rate, so a couple investigators at least have been out there. And they went through their investigations, and, you know, the thing that I felt at the end of it, it wasn't really conclusive. You know, they had some strange experiences, and it was kind of like, you know, what is that, or what could that be? But I guess they weren't out there long enough to really get into some nuts and bolts investigation, which is what I favor. Now, also in the area is an organization that centers around a guy named James, and I believe it's pronounced Gilliland. He has a ranch out there. It's a prime viewing spot for all these unusual sightings. And he apparently hosts visitors to his ranch and lets them experience the nightly events. I'm not sure if he does that for free or if he charges people. I mean, he used to be in real estate, so he does have business experience, and I kind of get the feeling like this is sort of his bread and butter as well, which is fine, you know, but that's just good to know when you, you know, approach it. He and others, I guess, in his organization have a website called ECETI where you can learn more about them. I wouldn't dwell on that too much because I think a lot of the information and stuff that they put out is a bit unreliable, to say the least. ECETI is actually an acronym for Enlightened Contact with Extraterrestrial Intelligence. Okay, I mean, I'm not in any position to judge them. I'll take them on their word, but I don't really know them, you know, well, and I just feel uncomfortable with this because it's a little out there. The website describes James as an author, minister, transpersonal intuitive. Hands up everybody who knows what a transpersonal intuitive is, because I'm not one of them. Also a counselor and a visionary. And let's not forget he's also described as a contactee. Well, okay, I'm not really firmly set in believing that people... I mean, well, let me put it to you this way. I'm not really sure some of these people who claim to have experiences being contacted by aliens is really happening, or is it something based on their psychosocial developmental something or other? In fact, even sleep disorders, you know, I mean, they say that that can make people think other things are happening when in fact they're not. You know, none of that has ever happened to me, and I thank God it hasn't. I don't want to stand in judgment of these people. I mean, I'll just take them at their word. But in terms of proving whether this is really happening or not, I need a lot more scientific proof and data to be able to make that kind of judgment. So, you know, I'm happy to just leave them to it, and but I don't put much credence in it. Now, I would like to say there are a couple of contactee stories, really, or people's tales, reports, if you will, that do make me pause and wonder. And the first is the one for Betty and Barney Hill. Remember that way back when? I think they were like the first really recorded case of having been abducted. That's very compelling. And then the other one was, I can't remember the guy's name, but he was a young man at the time. They were coming out of the mountains from having been logging. There was a craft clearly visible to all of them over in the woods. And in a brash burst of bravado, this young man goes running out over towards the light. And the guys are yelling and screaming at him to get back in the truck. Well, then he got hit by the light that was under the craft. And the other guys freaked and left because they thought he was dead. And then he turns up, like, I think it was something like 5 days later or even longer, and his family had to come get him. Everybody thought he was dead. And to this day, when you see that guy on these UFO shows, that man's clearly traumatized by something. And the fact that these other guys all witnessed it, I don't know. That, to me, that's a compelling story. But, you know, just to say it off the cuff and everything, I need more proof and explanation. So I'm happy to leave James and his followers to their business and move on. Now, also on that ECETI site, they mentioned that they see a lot of military, helicopters and craft flying over the ranch, and they feel that the military is monitoring them and kind of harassing them. Well, I'm thinking it might just be because there is a military base very close by in Yakima, Washington. And, you know, if any of you live near an airport and certainly a military base, you know, you're going to see lots of flying vehicles in the sky. I don't think that necessarily means they're spying on them. But, you know, that's how they take it. So, I don't know. I just don't feel like that's the most reliable avenue to pursue, you know, getting involved in all that. I'd rather back out and approach it more logically and practically. Because as I've told you before, if you know, perhaps you weren't with us for the first couple shows, my philosophy is like akin to what Jason Hawes and Grant Wilson espouse when they say, you know, they go in to try and disprove something, and then what they can't disprove might actually be proof of what they're seeking. In their case, you know, ghosts and the paranormal, things like that. And that's how I approach it, too. I think that's a sound philosophy. So getting back to that and setting aside the James Gilliland ranch business, I'd like to share with you that the magazine Popular Mechanics, I'm sure many of you have heard of it, they did a countrywide study and reported the results in an article called U.S. Map of the Top UFO Hotspots and How to Report a Sighting. And that was issued in their December 2009 issue. And it turns out, interestingly, that Yakima County, Washington, which is where all this is happening, ranked fourth in the nation for the most UFOs spotted in a less populated county. Now, the other category was more densely populated areas. So for the less populated areas in the country, Yakima County came in fourth. The tally was counted for the years 1947 through 2005. So clearly something has been going on, you know, around there for a long time. Now you might be wondering, well, why did they start in 1947? Well, that's because that year the first what I would call modern UFO sighting was reported in that same area, right over the Cascade Mountains, near Mount St. Helens and Mount Adams. Pilot Kenneth Arnold reported seeing 9 saucer-shaped craft flying in and out of formation around 3 o'clock in the afternoon. In John Kelly's article for TheExaminer.com, he quotes Mr. Arnold as saying, and this is quote now, "They were extremely bright, as if they were nickel-plated, and flying at an immense rate of speed," unquote. He estimated they were at an altitude between 9,500 and 10,000 feet. And then he clocked them from Mount Rainier to Mount Adams, and they arrived at an amazing speed of about 1,200 miles an hour. So the sightings have continued since then, and the thing that I like about, you know, Mr. Arnold's story is that now do I get into that again? Hold on a second. I'm sorry. I'm still dealing with some nervous jitters, and I may have skipped around here. Well, let me just say, in terms of Mr. Arnold, Okay, here it is. He landed in Yakima, and he asked everyone in the airport, you know, did you see them? Did you see them? Did they show up on radar? Nobody saw anything. So it was a little while later, but he ran into another pilot from a town called Ukiah, and he shared the story with him. And this other guy said that he had sighted the same objects the previous afternoon from the mountains in the Ukiah section. So I find that compelling because, you know, Kenneth Arnold was up in the air with them. He could clearly see them. It was daytime. It was a wonderful way to observe these craft and be able to say, oh, yeah, that's the UFO. And the same with the other pilot. He had seen the same thing. And, you know, I always speak about the credibility of witnesses. I mean, pilots are good witnesses. And they both had many hours and years of flying experience, hadn't apparently seen anything like it before. So I find that an exciting exciting occurrence. But anyway, let's move along in time to some more recent stories about UFO activity over not only the Gilliland Ranch, but the entire Mount Adams area. Now, if you want to see the links, just a reminder, pop over to cryptoville.wordpress.com. It's the first article on the homepage and the first link. It's dated from July 6th of this year. And it always excites me to have more recent, you know, viewings and reports. So I looked at this video, and it shows a clear image of a bright ball moving quickly across the night sky. And there's like a group of people chattering and excited around the camera, and what appears to be what I would call, you know, like a host or a leader, you know, guiding them through this sky-watching experience. Well, all of a sudden, the speaker says, now, hold on, it's going to flash back in a few seconds. And sure enough, within seconds of saying that, this thing flashes very brightly, and everybody's oohing and aahing. It's interesting, but honestly, to me, it looked like a satellite or some other man-made space traffic rather than a UFO. And I have reasons for saying that, which I'll get to in a little bit. I don't find sightings like these especially interesting because they're so far away. You can't see any detail. You can't get a good idea of the size and the real shape of the object. So it comes down to seeing another ball of light, which, you know, I don't think is all that interesting. But, you know, they were all excited and enjoyed themselves, so I guess that was good for them. Moving along, back into April 13th of this year, the second video. To be honest with you, I couldn't watch the whole video because it was so boring. What I saw on the side of the mountain and what they were so excited about looks to me very much like ball lightning. Ball lightning is often seen around mountains, especially in areas with seismic activity, back to those volcanoes. Now, if you'd like to compare, because I have that video, you know, in the post, today's post on the blog, and below it, I include another link to another article in the blog. And what I'd like you to do is look at that and compare them, because this other story was about orbs of light that were seen or are still seen on Brown Mountain in North Carolina. And that's a wonderful story because scientists are investigating it from local universities. They have a really good paranormal research group. Now, their acronym is LEMOR, L-E-M-O-R or something like that, or U-R. Well, their website's very impressive, too, and they really approach it scientifically, and I have to respect that. So in the second video, what the people are seeing on the side of Mount Adams, pardon me, looks to me more like ball lightning than anything. Now, please don't get upset with me, because if you were with us 2 weeks ago, and I'm rattling on about the USO, the submerged UFOs, you know that I do believe that there are some kind of alien craft messing around with our planet, and that, yes, they're under intelligent control. But I'm just real cautious about trying to distinguish what is a real UFO versus what are we mistaking in life, ball lightning or, you know, satellites, the space station whizzing by, whatever. I just like to be cautious because, to me, if you can weed that garbage out, it makes these real UFO sightings even more exciting because you know you've got the real thing. Okay, moving on. From January 9th of 2008, there's a video of a triangle formation flying over Mount Adams. Okay, it's an interesting video because clearly you see three lighted points of the triangle, but you can also see between the space, like where the triangular craft should be, you know, blocking out the stars behind it. Well, no, you could see right through it. So to me, my first thought is it looks then like it's three craft moving in unison in a triangular formation. Now, you may have heard me say this before, and if not, you could read me saying it on various posts on the blog. I really believe these triangular-shaped UFOs belong to our military. I really do. They've been seen around the world. They're seen at such low levels, you know, like altitude levels. And I think they're experimenting with them, testing them, and all that good stuff. And also, let's not forget, there's this military base right there in Yakima. So if this, you know, three points of light business is seen right near that mountain, well, maybe not too surprising because they might be. And furthermore, I believe I read that that base is a training station. So all the more reason for them to be, you know, experimenting with their new craft. Now, there is another possibility, which I find interesting as well. Back to that Popular Mechanics article on UFO hotspots, and I quote them here. Military refueling lanes crisscross the nation, and lights from air tankers and warplanes flying at night in close formation could appear as triangles of light from the ground. Now, have you not heard the stories where they say, well, you know, we saw the triangular-shaped craft, you know, but it's three points of light. We could see through it, and the two back ones seemed to twist and bend, so we think it was morphing or something. Well, suddenly that makes a whole lot more sense if you're thinking, oh, that's our military up there refueling some kind of a air tanker or a warplane or who knows what. And again, Yakima, Washington, their military base is a training base, so they could have been training to do that at night, which to me is a heart attack on the wing, because I can't imagine how they do that in daytime, right? Have you ever seen them do that on TV? Holy mackerel. And then to be doing that at night, oh my, God bless them, you know, more than I'd want to do. So anyway, what is this particular triangle in that video? It's hard to say. But I'm going to err on the side of caution and say that this is probably something man-made or from the military base, besides which it seemed a bit too tame for UFO behavior. Okay. Next up, I have a video that was made by Sean Hannity, the political pundit from Fox News. Actually, it was, I don't think he went. It seems to be his crew that went out there to investigate. No idea what spurred Sean to send them out there, if indeed he even sent them out there. I mean, who knows what goes on in TV land. But at any rate, they were out there in 2009. I thought it was interesting, really. As I say, I don't know why he sent his crew out there or whatever happened. But the video that they caught was interesting. So if you have a look at it and see what you think, I think they caught another ball of light. I mean, they did catch another ball of light traveling quickly through the sky. Now, this is up in the sky. It was traveling in such a way that it looked pretty, you know, tame, pretty regular. I think it was just a satellite. Or perhaps people have said too, you know, scientists and astronomers, that we can actually, if you've got clear enough view of the sky at night, that is no light pollution, we can actually see the space station zooming by. Isn't that amazing? I've never seen it, but people have. And then who knows, it could be another military experiment. The thing that gets me about this particular video is when Mr. Gilliland, you know, goes into it about how the aliens gave us microwave and other technology, and they handed it over to Bell Labs and allowed them to develop it. This has been refuted very clearly that that is not true. Men and women are responsible for all the developments in our technology, and scientists can verify it. And what an insult to these men and women who did all this brilliant, you know, research and inventing and everything. It just gets on my nerves, and it's another reason why I just can't deal with that whole kind of mindset. I'm sorry if that disappoints you, but, you know, I've got to be true to myself and tell you like I see it. So what does that mean, then? You're thinking, okay, so there's really no alien stuff out there, Susan? Well, remember, I do believe in some alien activity. I don't know who they are or what they are, and that's why I put them in the category of cryptozoology, because they're creatures we don't really know or understand. I am open to the possibility of their existence, but what's going on in and around Mount Adams? You know, the thing that puzzles me is, you know, Kenneth Arnold's account with the 9 saucer-shaped craft that sunny afternoon in 1947, very compelling. You know, again, because he was up there with them, he could see them. There were no orbs of light, no fuzzy images. I mean, he saw everything clearly. So I have to think that what he and that other pilot saw from Ukiah were, you know, the real deal. But since then, people have seen alien craft, authentic alien craft, but how are we going to know? Because the multitudes are confusing legitimate sightings with this plethora of satellites that are racing around the globe, the space station, and, you know, and whatever the heck the military is doing up there and in parts unknown. I did read an interesting column by an expert who said that actually the space around Earth is full of satellites. They are mostly low Earth satellites, which they call LEOs, L-E-O-S, low Earth satellites, and they can be tracked if you know how. Apparently, you know, and this is what they said too in that ranch video or in other segments I've seen about that that ranch, that they can always tell when there's a satellite passing over. And I'm not so sure, because apparently if you take the satellite tracking software called JTRAC and start it, it will only show a couple of major NASA satellites over the Earth. Observers need to enter each satellite's Keplerian data in order for the software to capture and track the data on screen. And, by the way, I didn't know what the heck Keplerian data is. I looked it up, and briefly, for those of us math challenged, let me just put it this way. Those are the figures they need for a mathematical formula to calculate a satellite's position in space at any given time. Okay, so it's like the directions to each satellite you have to give it so that it shows up on the software and they can track it. So if they just turn this thing on and they're only seeing the basic report, that's incomplete, and they don't really know. There could be satellites, and they just don't know that there's satellites. So, you know, that could just be a big misunderstanding, and not that they're trying to deceive people. I don't think they are. I just think that might be a misunderstanding. But by the way, how does anyone get Keplerian data to put into the software? No idea. Anyway, other witnesses who live in the Pacific Northwest, I've read their testimonies on various sites, they said that they have seen countless satellites in their lifetimes. And even though they believe in UFOs, all of them said they did, in every case they say they've never seen one. So they're able to distinguish between the satellites and if they saw something other than satellites, which I thought was interesting. Now, the Gilliland Ranch has also mentioned the men in black. Well, yes, people claim they've seen them around the area. But men in black are usually seen around military installations, around the country and really anywhere. And let's not forget, we've got that base nearby. Now, some people are like to imply, or I guess they really believe, that the men in black are actually aliens in disguise. Well, if that's the case, then they have sunk, in my opinion. I mean, they aren't anywhere near as sophisticated and brilliant as I would expect them to be. Why? With all the high-level technology at their disposal, they shouldn't have to be present to spy on us. I feel sure they'd have something that would pick up our conversations and actions, not to mention those of our military. Having to dress up as a human and walk around the planet, it just doesn't say high-tech to me. People claim also that they see Bigfoot in the area. Now, I've told you this probably several times so far on these shows. I believe it's only a matter of time before Bigfoot is welcomed by the scientific community as the unique and special species that it is. I just know he's out there. I feel sure they're walking around the wildernesses of the world, and let's face it, trying to stay out of humanity's way. Who can blame them? Now, Bigfoot has been seen throughout the whole northwest coastal area, which is where Mount Adams sits. So I don't see that as any big or significant surprise. I don't think Bigfoot is connected to aliens, nor do I think there is any evidence that the aliens are interested in Bigfoot whatsoever. So I think we can just leave Bigfoot alone until that moneymaker and crew find the definitive proof for its existence. So at the end of all this, you know, what's the verdict? Well, there may very well be alien activity, in my opinion, in and around Mount Adams, Washington. But some people do seem to take it to extremes, and some people who, for whatever reason, I believe they're so anxious to have an alien encounter, they'll believe anything, which is almost a little sad to me. In almost every video I've seen taken, they're seeing either a satellite or ball lightning. I mean, that's what it looks like to me. In some cases, it may be military training exercises, fine. But, I mean, again, that's not alien. I really feel that if the general public were more aware of the science behind satellites and earth science like the ball lightning, they could discern a real UFO sighting from these other distractions. Let's remember that UFOs are often seen around military installations, so there may be times when a real UFO is buzzing around the Yakima County airspace. But it's going to be lost in the tonnage of reports about satellites and ball lightning. So I thought, well, let's try and figure out how do we tell the difference when we're looking up into the night sky or even the daytime sky. Well, satellites. Well, they're going to move in a steady trajectory or, you know, a steady line, pretty much at the same rate of speed. Now, one interesting fact I found out, if a satellite looks like it flashes, that means it was positioned for that moment where it caught some of the sun's rays. Isn't that interesting? That's what they were seeing that night. We have to remember, satellites are really high up in the sky. It might be low Earth orbit, but for in terms of us and airplanes and, you know, they are way up there. So they can, if anyone was on them, they could see, you know, the curvature of the planet and over to the horizon to a certain extent. So as they're whizzing by, they might for a moment catch some last rays of the sun or something. And that's what sets that little momentary flash. Really, really interesting. What an interesting world we live in, huh? Okay, well, what about ball lightning? Well, ball lightning is pretty much round and orb-shaped, and you can count on it to move in a chaotic way. I mean, there is no rhyme or reason for it. Sometimes it, you know, raises up a little bit high to the treetops level, and other times then it drops down, and then boof, it disappears. It's very erratic, and it always seems to be around mountains, you know, where there could be seismic activity. Oh, and this is why I brought up the fact that Mount Adams is a stratovolcano, building up tremendous pressures. Who knows when it's ever going to blow again, but that doesn't mean that it's not building up pressures. And we don't really understand the mechanism for how that pressure sparks this lightning. At least I don't think we do. A physicist might prove me wrong. But suffice to say, it certainly does seem to happen coincidentally, around mountains, especially before they blow. You know, down in Mexico City, which you may or may not realize is the top of a caldera, an old volcano, and it's ringed by other mountains as well. They're always seeing balls of light around their mountains, and they videotape them and put them on YouTube. And to me, that is all very clearly ball lightning. And I hope you go over to the blog post about the Brown Mountain orbs and have a look, and then you can compare for yourself. And once you see it, you'll be like, oh, yeah, I can see that. So what does a real UFO look like? Well, it may move in a straight trajectory and then suddenly veer off in another direction. I mean, you know how we always hear people say, well, human body couldn't stand the G's to do that, you know, or couldn't take the G's or whatever that is. Couldn't take the G's to make a maneuver like that. It has to be alien and la-di-da. So if they're not moving in an intelligent sort of straight way, they might veer off in another direction. But certainly a satellite's not going to do that. And if ball lightning does it, it's going to, you know, veer, you know, just craziness. You know, it's a ball lightning. A UFO may become stationary. It may follow another human craft in the air with it. It may accelerate, then it may decelerate, and it may suddenly disappear. So, you know, I think we can narrow it down. And my hope is that, you know, we try to be a little more discerning when we look at these things and really weed out the garbage from the good stuff. And if you're interested, I have another post in the blog. What was it? I want to say it was the Mojave Desert. I might be wrong. Look, if you go to the blog on the homepage, look to the right, and there's a whole list of different directories, you know, like they're in white against the pink. Look for the most popular tab or directory. Go under the most popular, and then scroll all the way down to the bottom of that page, and you'll find it. That's where you'll find the Brown Mountain orbs, and you'll also find just above that this other one. It's a daylight sighting of a UFO that I think is the real deal. And watch how it moves. And, you know, give you an indication of what I'm driving at here. You know, I mean, it looks like an intelligent force is flying it. And again, even with, you know, Kenneth Arnold's sighting, they weren't like jerking around in the sky doing all sorts of weird things. I mean, they might have been, you know, doing some maneuvers into formation, but there was an intelligence behind it versus what you'd see with ball lightning. So I hope we can all keep our eyes on the sky and try to discern more clearly what's up there and what we're seeing. Please don't do it when you're driving or operating dangerous equipment or something like that, my safety announcement. Stay safe. That's the most important thing. Okay, now I've got I guess I have about 10 minutes left. And last week, I promised to go back and cover some quick little stories about other USO, the unidentified submerged objects that have been recorded in the last century, really. That's where these all date from. And last week I got started with the sighting that was south of Malta. And I forgot to mention Malta, if you don't know, is in the Mediterranean somewhere. But that's all I know. Okay, let me share this one with you. It's called Golfo Nuevo, and it occurred in Argentina in 1960. And I'm more or less going to read through these for you. In a report released through the History Channel in 1960, the Argentinian Navy encountered two unknown submerged objects in Golfo Nuevo. It occurred about 650 miles south of Buenos Aires, Argentina. It was initially thought that the objects were submarines, but this theory was soon dismissed as the objects appeared to break into smaller pieces and fly out of the ocean. According to reports by Philip Mantle, these pieces disappeared as they left the water. Of course, skeptics believe that all that was seen were submarines firing torpedoes, but it was revealed that in 1960, the firing of six or more torpedoes at one time was not possible. Now, does someone mind telling me what is it with these objects that break into smaller pieces? I mean, that is a weird little design, if you ask me. It's almost like, well, what do they come together and have some kind of a status meeting or something, and then they say, Joe, you go get this, Harry, you go get that, Samantha, you go get this, and everybody gets it in a little section and it breaks apart and they go. I mean, it's just craziness. although in Star Trek, right, the Enterprise, the saucer could disengage from the base, so I guess it's not too far off. But those sightings drive me a little nuts because it just seems like, what the heck's going on? All right. Seattle, Washington in 1966, again in the Pacific Northwest, the USS Tyru SS-416 left Pearl Harbor bound for Seattle, Washington during the Rose Festival. The submarine was set at a pier near downtown Seattle and toured by thousands of curious individuals. Unknown at this time was that the sub's trip to Seattle had been far from routine. While cruising on the water's surface one late afternoon, the port lookout reported a strange object at a range of 2 miles bearing 315 degrees relative. The port lookout referred his contact to the starboard and object-oriented design lookouts. Apparently that's another type of officer. The three lookouts, using binoculars, were shocked to see a metallic craft larger than a football field dropped from the clouds into the ocean. Okay, this was 1966, so we definitely didn't have anything like that. It was reported to tumble end over end, hit the water, and disappear among the water geysers and ocean. When starboard and the other lookouts confirmed what they had seen, the port lookout related that initially he had seen the object go from the water up into the clouds. All three lookouts would soon see the object leave the ocean and join the clouds. During the same time period, radar reported a contact at the same range and bearing. Sonar was picking up strange echoes. The captain was called to the bridge. The captain, along with the chief quartermaster, arrived within minutes. Almost immediately, the unknown object fell from the clouds into the ocean once again. Soon, however, the Tyru moved out of visual contact with the object. The captain issued an order to all present. Never discussed what they had seen under any circumstances. Apparently someone didn't keep that order. The captain went below and sent a radio message. The witnesses had seen a metallic craft decked out with machined parts. There appeared to be windows around its circumference. No noise was heard. The object was shaped like a saucer with a bowl inverted in the saucer, and it was huge. Interesting if true, especially because you've heard me say this before, if it's military people, trained observers, et cetera, viewing this stuff, you know, I give it a lot of credence. Okay, off the coast of Florida in 1968, a Panamax bulk carrier, the Gratuna, under the Swiss flag was off the coast of Florida, loaded with coal and en route to Japan. The reporter of this incident was a second officer who was on night watch from midnight to 4 a.m., The Gratuna was in good weather and cruising at about 15 knots when our witness, who was watching the lights of Palm Beach, saw lights under the water's surface. The lights were about 10 to 15 meters deep and 30 to 40 meters distant. He could make out an object which looked like a plane without wings or a tail. He could also see windows from which light glowed. He thought there were 10 to 12 windows. Well, this sounds more like a cigar-shaped craft. The USO was crossing the path of the Gratuna and moving about twice her speed. It was soon under the ship's bow. The second officer estimated the length of the object at 9 meters. Another seaman on the bridge admitted to seeing something under the water, but wasn't sure what it was. The second officer was experienced with many years at sea. He had seen about everything there was to see on the ocean, but this time he was baffled. His testimony is definite proof of the existence of UFOs, and it may very well be. As we know from Shag Harbor and the Sonya Fjord, oh goodness, they're rushing me off here again. I think we have 5 more minutes. All right, let me try and get through a couple more. Bus Ledge, Virginia, 1968. Another case of UFOs entering the water is that of the Bus Ledge encounter. In 68, Bus Ledge, a girls' summer camp in Virginia, would be visited by 4 UFOs which maneuvered in and out of the waters of Lake Champlain. Now, don't confuse that with Lake Champlain in Vermont. This apparently is another one. Michael Lapp, a 16-year-old maintenance man, and 19-year-old water ski instructor Janet Cornell were relaxing on a boat dock on a quiet afternoon as most of the camp inhabitants were away at a swim meet. Late afternoon, they were surprised to see a bright light approaching the lake. The object appeared to be a large disc. Soon, 3 similar objects fell from the smaller objects fell from the larger craft. These 3 craft began to move over the lake, appearing to put on an air show. Soon the mothership descended into the water, emerged, and came right at the 2 friends. The object was so close that 2 small beings could be seen through a dome-like transparent top. The next thing the 2 friends knew, they were waking up, still staring at the object now in the distance. Michael was trying to get his bearings. He checked on Janet, who seemed to be in a trance. Soon they heard the welcome sounds of the swim team returning to camp. The mothership moved from view, disappearing into the sky. It would be more than 10 years before Michael, plagued by disturbing dreams of being abducted, would call upon the services of the Center for UFO Studies. Investigator Walter Webb took the case and suggested regressive hypnosis. This procedure brought out the details of an alien abduction. Likewise, Janet would also find that she had been abducted and subjected to medical tests. Webb would also find other witnesses from the camp that saw strange lights over Lake Champlain the same night of the abductions. Well, that's disturbing, I have to say. I hate when they, these stories where they take people without their permission. It's just, ugh, I really don't know what to make of that. Okay, another short one. Costa Rica, 1971. A rare photograph is taken of a gigantic UFO over Lake Cote by a government mapping program in 1971. The photograph clearly shows details of the terrain below and a silver disc-shaped object which appears to be entering the water. American expert analysis deems the photograph authentic, and because the plane was flying at fixed altitude of 10,000 feet, it can be estimated that the UFO was over 600 feet in diameter. Huh. I think if you Google or on YouTube, put in UFO photograph Costa Rica 1971, you might be able to see it. And that's another strange one, too. How long is this next one? Oh, let's talk about this one in Italy. Milazzo, Italy, from 1986. In February of 86, a UFO moving in the water was spotted by one Antonio Abramo, who was fishing alone at night in the... Okay, I don't speak Italian, but the Largo di Milazzo. He first noticed an intense yellow light rising from the sea and illuminating a large area of water. The light began to change from yellow to greenish, light blue, and finally white. He estimated the light was several kilometers from his boat. As he watched the light, the sea began to boil, and an unknown elliptical object exited the sea. Abramo could see a lighted domed top on the object. A number of small lights of various colors circled the object. Soon the unknown craft began to rise and climb into the skies. It stopped momentarily, then sped away. He estimated the entire experience was only about 20 seconds in length. Interesting account because I've also read, and I'm sure you have too, of people who claim to have seen USOs and the water seems to boil as they're coming up. You know, it's almost like they must be venting something. And who knows what it is, because we just don't know about their technology or anything. But I think suffice to say there's a lot of compelling evidence. And for me, a lot of it is more when it happens in the water, I guess because it's closer to us. There's, you know, less distance as opposed to looking up how many thousands of feet up in the sky. I mean, we just don't know. Okay, well, I'm going to get shushed off here quickly. So thank you for joining me again this evening. I hope you enjoyed it. I'll be back in 2 weeks, and that'll be August 24th, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We're going to switch gears a bit and do a program about the Black Beasts of Dartmoor. Very, very interesting stuff. You know, they have all, in the literature that I've read over the course of my life, strange things do seem to happen on moors, so I find this story really spooky and interesting. So hopefully you'll join us and listen to that tale. Again, you can find me on cryptoville.wordpress.com. If you don't want to go over to WordPress, you can find me on Facebook, and that's the page is simply called Cryptoville. So thank you again for joining me this evening, and I wish you all a good night, sweet dreams, and God bless. Bye.